Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd. Dave, it's the slow time, the last week of OTAs this week. We've got mini camp next week that's mandatory, and of course Mike Wallace will be the one guy who won't be there because he's not under contract. But a little quiet time here as we go through OTAs. Yesterday, I saw that Mike Tomlin took the boys gaming, and I was like, I can't believe Mike Tomlin took the boys to the casino. But apparently, that's not where they went.
Yeah, they went to Dave and Buster's, and Tomlin, I think, has done this every year, maybe since, I can't remember if in Tomlin's first season if he did this during the OTA sessions, but I think he's always managed to fit in kind of one field trip during the OTA sessions. They went to Dave and Buster's reportedly yesterday. No injuries were reported. I'm sure there are a lot of, I don't know, it's been years. Have you been to Dave and Buster's recently?
I'm not sure I've ever been to a Dave and Buster's.
I've been to one. Of course, we don't have one here, but I have been to one, but it's probably been about 10 to 15 years ago. So I can only imagine the type of games that they have in there. Mark Cabali joked that I asked, did Todd Haley go? And he said, yeah, him and Ben were playing skee ball together. And I jokingly asked back, did Ben throw the skee ball more than he ran? More than he ran the skee ball.
Yeah.
And but hey, you know, this is part of the team building side of things. You know, you got a lot of young players in there. You know, it's just all about team building and, you know, going forward. And let's face it, they have workouts today, Wednesday, and Thursday. This was the week that they just had the one extra day in the OTA session.
Right.
So they'll have their 10th one on Thursday, which the word's being passed along that one will actually take place at Heinz Field. So I suppose the kickers will get a little put in the fire quite a bit during that session there. And also this week, supposedly, they have not worked on a lot of red zone stuff or any red zone implementing of the new Todd Haley offense up until this point, to my understanding. So this week, I think they're working on a lot of red zone. And you mentioned Mike Wallace not going to be there this week. It looks like Mike Adams also will miss this one as well because of school requirements, as will
right.
As will the other two rookies in Alameda Ta'amu and David DeCastro.
Yeah, a little unfortunate not to have three of your top four rookies there, but this isn't new news. I think the Heinz Field thing is, acclimate the boys. Give them it's a little bit of a treat. Go play in the big stadium. A lot of the guys who are there won't have ever actually been in Heinz Field, and I'm sure that'll be a special time for them and go in and have a practice there and get excited about it. And then come back and grind it through the 3 days of minicamp. Then they get to go home. You know, it'll be mid-June at that point. And they really, these guys are going to get, you know, 6 weeks off. And that's going to be some serious training time to get ready. You know, this is not the 1970s, 1980s, where you come into training camp and you get yourself into shape. The veterans play themselves into shape. This is guys coming in expected to be, you know, whatever day camp opens for the Steelers, July 30th or whatever it is. These guys are expected to be in close to top shape. Now, obviously, that's not the case with all these guys, and some of the guys will be coming off injury and rehabbing and doing those types of things. But certainly, for the young guys, you expect them to be in top shape. And one of the young guys, Dave, you had a conversation, and we talked about this a little bit in our last podcast. Ziggy Hood is a guy I think the Steelers expect big things from, and he didn't maybe take the step forward they would have liked last year in his second year. He played okay, but he wasn't kind of a dominating presence there. But you put a post up on the website, and we're going to have Ziggy Hood's trainer, Bill Nickel, with us for the last 15 minutes of today's show.
Absolutely. This all started, the videos started circulating around the web, and I posted three of them. Ziggy's working at Outer Limit Sports there in Pittsburgh. this offseason, all the way up until training camp, till the end of July there. And the videos started circulating from YouTube, some of his workouts. He's got a sitting jump onto a 50-inch box, and, you know, some other videos you can see there. And this is how it started, and I had that in my Six Around the Web post yesterday, Monday morning. And Bill actually chimed in on that post and passed along some stats and all like that, and that led to us hopefully having him on in the second half of this show. But some quick stats for you. Hit phase one of Ziggy Hood ran evidently from March to April, and there it was a 29-day period. And Hood reportedly dropped his body fat from 24% to 18% during that time span, and his weight went, he gained 2 pounds, 300, he went from 305 to 307. Bill also passes along word that he lost 18 pounds of fat but gained 20 pounds of muscle. So, you know, I'm no bodybuilder by you know, or workout warrior or anything like that, but that makes sense. And if anybody would know, it'd be his trainer there. So, you know, that was phase one. And supposedly Bill said, and we'll clarify this with him in the second part of the show, that was phase one, and Ziggy starts phase two now. So I'm guessing that from when these pictures that have been taken, the bull before and after that are up, not only on Outer Limits website, but on I have it in that post on Steelers Depot as well. It's quite a transformation in just those 4 weeks, in my opinion, especially when you look at him from behind. And, you know, this is a guy that's a workout warrior, so it'll be interesting to find out, has Ziggy just been doing it wrong all you know, this whole time? And the good thing about it is I think Bill is also a Steelers fan, so maybe he can chime in on how this will affect, you know, the play of Ziggy as well.
Yeah, I think maybe not Ziggy's been doing it wrong. It's just, you know, with better guidance and I'm sure a lot of focus on his diet as well and really intense work, you just get better. I mean, he's obviously a big guy and a talented guy, and it's just, you know, you dedicate yourself to this. Having had some workout experience of my own, and you find that it's difficult to keep with it all the time. But if you do something like P90X and you do it for you know, 90 days and you do it for an hour or 90 minutes a day, you can't help but get yourself in better shape. And you look at, you know, videos that you see on all those infomercials where people go from, you know, the chicks go from being round to being smoking hot and the dudes are ready to kung fu fight you. You know, Ziggy's, you know, he's at it. That's good stuff. I mean, we know that the Steelers do have high expectations, obviously, with the retirement now of Aaron Smith. You know, the young guys are expected to step forward, and Brett Kiesel's probably got a year or two left. But Ziggy's a guy who, you know, you want him to continue to kind of carry that flag and be the kind of guy up there who's really stuffing the run, holding the edge. And you know, Steelers defense took a step back in that aspect last year.
A little bit against the run. You know, of course, the pressure with the linebackers we've talked about, well, of course, with Harrison and Woodley missing time and injuries, the pressure wasn't necessarily there. We've talked about the 3-4 defense, especially defensive line in the past, how, you know, they're not sack machines as much as they are pressure machines, and especially, you know, against the pass and all. I also wrote about Cameron Hayward earlier, or at the end of, actually it was on Sunday, about the role that he's going to play this year. And, you know, several people think that maybe Cameron can push Ziggy for a starting job. Maybe that's what's kind of, you know, led to Ziggy maybe, you know, kind of working harder. Of course, we don't know how hard he has and hasn't been working in previous off seasons. One person commented on the post, well, why is he waiting until season four to do this? We don't know that that's the case. We just know that he's just started working with this one particular trainer here. And as we've said all along, Ziggy's been known as a workout warrior type. And we're going to clarify all this with him. But Cameron Hayward, you know, let's talk about this defensive line a little bit, David. You know, with Aaron Smith now gone, with Chris Hoke retired, with Casey Hampton likely, even if he doesn't start the season on the PUP list, he's probably not going to be 100% at the go there from week one there. The Steelers really have just three bodies when you think about it to rotate around two defensive end spots, you know, until somebody sticks their head out, maybe like a Corbin Bryant or, you know, someone like that in training camp here. So these three guys, talking about Ziggy, Hayward, and Kiesel, are going to be playing quite a few snaps here. And, I think Hayward, even if he does not win this starting left defensive end spot from Ziggy Hood, which I doubt he does, he's going to have a big role in supplanting both of these guys on long drives. Brett Kiesel even mentioned in his interview this past week on the radio that he's going to need some plays off, you know, throughout the season as well, too. So these three guys, until somebody else pokes their head out at defensive end, and yes, I do know Steve McClendon can take some snaps at that position, but, you know, they mostly are going to want him to play nose tackle, you know, with Hampton banged up here. But that's going to be a very important position for the Steelers this year.
No question about it. And I think, you know, just like we talked about the corner position coming in last year, we had the young guys who would like to see what happens. I think the guys on the Steeler defensive line are maybe, you know, again, we're going to look at the corners and who wins that battle for the corner opposite Ike. But I do think kind of in terms of emergence, certainly the bar has been raised for Steve McClendon's performance this year. And, you know, we're all excited to see how that develops. But I think Ziggy and Steve McClendon are probably the guys that I would be as interested in any in terms of their relative improvement. I mean, with the corners, it's who wins the job. Who do the Steelers think is going to be the guy, and who's going to be the nickel corner or the slot corner? But with McClendon and Ziggy, I really think you want to see kind of how much they have improved as players. And I think expectations are really high. And for me, on that side of the ball, they're going to be the two most interesting guys.
Absolutely. And Brett Kiesel just needs to stay healthy. We know what Brett can bring to the table. He just needs to stay healthy. When you look at some of these guys behind the obvious, behind Kiesel, behind Hood, behind Cameron Hayward, of course, Alameda Ta'amu, I mean, this guy is just going to be a nose plugger. You're not going to see him take any snaps, you know, in a nickel-type situation. He'll be lucky to get on the field in the base 3-4 Okie at some point during the season, probably around week 7, week 8. At probably would be my best guess going into it as he learns things. They're not going to rush him as long as they have Hampton and McClendon in there and they're playing up to standards. But when you look at behind, you know, Corbin Bryant is a guy that a lot of people talked about in training camp last year. Several people, I think Mike Pursuta even had him making the 53-man roster out of training camp last year. Of course, that didn't happen, and Bryant only got, I think, 5 or 6 plays at most, I think, against the Arizona Cardinals when he was activated for that, when he was promoted to the roster for that game during that period of time. Now you have guys, I think it was the Post-Gazette had an article on our buddy from Southern Connecticut State, Ikponwosa Igbenosin. How was that?
Oh, yeah, nice job. It sounds like you can do that without even looking at it.
Sounds like I went to Yale, doesn't it?
Yeah. I told you, Southern Connecticut State, you know, they used to rumble with those guys.
I hear you. Well, they had a nice article on Ike. He goes by Ike, evidently, with good reason. And I think Ed Bouchette dropped the name of Jake Stoller again today in his blog post this morning here. Al Woods, of course, a former early-round draft pick with the Saints, is still on the roster. He was on the Steelers' 53-man roster ever since he was claimed off of waivers from the Seahawks last year. Of course, he saw no playing time on the defensive side of the ball, so maybe he's another guy they think that can transfer to the defensive end spot as well. So that's going to be another kind of off the peripheral view type training camp battle, because I think they're going to be keeping an extra defensive end there behind those three mainstays there, and that'll definitely be a battle to watch in training camp.
So we'll have Bill Nickel here. He's going to be on for the last 15 minutes of the show, but we're looking forward into that.
Hey, and David, we caught hell on the talks about the cornerbacks.
I saw you had a little bit of a discussion on the blog.
Yeah, evidently, Keenan Lewis's one of his coaches. I don't know if it was high school coach or that's what it sounds like, possibly. And his brother, actually chimed in on that post. Now, his brother ended up getting a little testy with me and all like that. All I was asking for is full disclosure. He claimed not to be biased during his responses, but when you read both of the rebuttals from both these guys, it was obvious they had a dog in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, and listen, you know, all David and I have to go on, and this is not to take anything away from Keenan Lewis. We have 3 years worth of work from Keenan on the table to kind of dissect, although he's, you know, he only really got his big playing time last year, and that was rotating in nickel packages where he'd play outside and William Gay would shift inside. And you know, outside of that, all we have is tape on college tape on Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown and some training camp report or OTA reports from this offseason. It is speculation on our part. And I think they got aggravated the most when I said that I bet the coaches hope either Cortez Allen or Curtis Brown win that spot. Now, was that – yeah, that might have been a little bit over the top on my part. I'll take ownership on that. It's not like I'm rooting for either one of these guys. Hey, I hope Keenan Lewis wins the job and makes the Pro Bowl. Just like
you said, exactly. Whoever wins the job makes the Pro Bowl.
Absolutely, because that's a good thing, you know. And then they would just deal with this contract goal. I was looking more of it at a contractual standpoint and how Keenan Lewis has portrayed himself through the first 3 years, you know, on the roster and on. Yes, Carnell Lake has helped all these guys immensely. I, without a doubt, you know, I think he's a big player in all this as well too. So, you know, relax. It's OTA sessions. It's after the draft. We're talking about stuff going forward. It's mostly speculation on my part. If you feel differently, I totally respect that. I'm not saying that Keenan Lewis can't win this job out of training camp. So that, you know, just want to clarify my stance on that. I think you agree with that. So we apologize ruffling the feathers of the Keenan Lewis clan.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I think that is relatively interesting to talk about here is how much Carnell Lake has impacted what's been going on there and you know, creating a better teaching environment. I, you know, this is one thing. This is probably even harder as a fan, as somebody who pays a lot of attention, an even harder thing to assess. You see guys get moved out when the Steelers change from Zierlein to Kugler and their offensive line. We see some moves have been made in the defensive backfield when they bring Lake in. And, you know, you wonder, you know, the other coaches aren't going to kill the guys who have left or for whatever reason. But, you know, it's really difficult to assess the impact, how much Carnell Lake really pushed Keenan Lewis' development forward, or he just kind of got it all of a sudden, you know, it took him 3 years in the system to be that kind of guy.
And, you know, I post a piece, and they refused to go back and look at other posts, especially the post I did heading into the offseason talking about the Steelers and their free agent situations and all like that. I have praised the play of Keenan Lewis in the past, and there was some moments where the light came on with him. He had some nice pass breakups. He had he, of course, had the interception against the Chiefs to put the game to bed there. You know, just because I like the potential of Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown does not mean that I Keenan Lewis is going to just be thrown out with the bathwater. I think that's how they kind of took that situation. And let's remember too, all three of these guys weren't able to take advantage of Carnell Lake during the offseason last year because of the lockout. All three of these guys came in instantly into training camp. And then that's when the most of the instruction and all started. And when you're trying to get ready for the season, there's only so much that you can do in those situations. Of course, Cortez Allen missed time with the injury through most of training camp, and he really didn't. There were some thoughts that Cortez Allen wasn't even going to make the 53, that he might land on IR because just not getting any snaps, and it wasn't until that last preseason game, and what a good preseason game it was, that he made his mark in that game and eventually stuck to the 53-man roster and Cresden Butler was sent packing.
Yeah, and it was interesting because I think a lot of people coming into that certainly gave Creston Butler the edge.
Oh, I certainly did. I mean, if you would have told me, you know, heading into, you know, last offseason, you know, would Creston Butler not make the roster, I would have thought, man, there's no way. This guy, you know, this guy's pretty much damn near a lock, even though he didn't see a snap, you know, hadn't seen a snap or anything like that. You know, I thought he had a lot of potential there. But, you know, the Steelers, the way the numbers shook out with William Gay, keeping William Gay, and, of course, the two rookies coming in there, and, of course, re-up and Ike Taylor and all, the numbers didn't I bet they wish they had a 54th roster spot. But, yeah, you hit it on the head.
Okay, Dave, so we've got 3 days of OTAs left, and on Friday we'll wrap that stuff up. Give you any kind of news we have. Hopefully it just is vanilla stuff. The only kind of news that is breaking on OTAs is injuries, and obviously nobody wants any of that. So we'll wrap that stuff up on Friday. But, Dave, a couple things around the NFL are going on. One somewhat comical and one pretty serious. I think the somewhat humorous thing is I think we all put a stake in the heart of the Pro Bowl, and lo and behold, it rises from the dead, and the Pro Bowl will be played this year in Hawaii. I know you and I kind of like the game, and I'm going to defend it a little bit, but I got to assume you're surprised.
Yes and no. The thing, my biggest thing, and I am a fan of the Pro Bowl, David, especially the old school Pro Bowl when they actually played.
Right.
You know, the last few, though, it's quite, if it wasn't so damn obvious, you know? Yeah, at least with wrestling, sometimes it looks real, you know?
Yeah.
And heck, you know, getting hit in the head with a chair, I don't care. That's got to hurt at some point. At some point, someone misses. You know, I just like to see a little bit more effort. If not, turn this thing into, and I know we've talked about this before, and I did a post on it, turn this thing into a super teams or a superstars competition. With all these optical courses and all like that. But, you know, if you're going to have the Pro Bowl, it belongs in Hawaii.
Yes, I agree. It shouldn't be in Florida. It shouldn't be, you know.
New Orleans.
I still think it should be after the Super Bowl. But, yeah, you don't need it near the Super Bowl.
Right, and you know, that's the only time you can have it. And, yes, I understand injuries and all like that. But maybe put some sort of more incentive in it, monetary-wise or something like that, to get these guys to at least look like they're trying. So, you know, if they're not going to do that, then they're, you know, to have some of the things where the linemen come out of the snap and just basically stand up, I mean, let, you know, put flags on them or something, you know?
And yeah, I like the superstars idea, and I'm with you. You know, one of the things that I don't know that the average fan realizes, but the ratings for the Pro Bowl are way higher.
Now, that did amaze me.
They're smoking, you know, the NBA finals, the NHL finals. I mean, these ratings are off the charts. They're, you know, they're double digit numbers. They're big time numbers. And I have to believe that at the end of the day, that kind of money and ratings, that still plays a part. And that's why, you know, that's why it still exists.
Absolutely. Money powers everything. And if there's a play, if they got viewership, slap some ads up in there, you're damn sure going to, it's not going to go anywhere. I just wish, I know a lot of our listeners feel the same. I just wish it was more competitive the way it used to be. You and I are close to the same age, and we can remember. To me, the Pro Bowl was a big deal because growing up in Florida, that was the only time I got to see, you know, anytime you could see Steelers play football on TV, even if it was the Pro Bowl, was a big deal for me as a child. And I'd line up all my football cards and all like that. It was a big event for me as a child. And, you know, I enjoyed the games as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of less important one. The more important one is you got a $10 billion industry, and people close to the league are focused on this, but we're far enough from day one that maybe it's not that big a deal. But this issue with the referees is now becoming serious. The NFL has said they are looking to hire any referees that aren't associated with the BCS conference, whether it's arena football, you know, pick any lower tier conference, the MAC or the whatever. And so they are out there canvassing to have referees, and they're going to have to put them through a massive training program and get going. And they, you know, I just can't believe the NFL would you know, jeopardize things by not having the best possible officials out there. Now, look, that makes it sound like the refs have all the leverage. And I think at some level, the refs do have a ton of leverage here. It's late in the day and the negotiations obviously are ongoing. But this is something that will just scream to the front burner as we get closer to, you know, July and then in August, if nothing's been done.
Yeah, I thought we had all this labor strife behind us, David. Boy, what a – can you remember – you know, remembering back at some of our podcasts from last year at about this time, man. God, what a miserable thing. And then now you got this with the referees and all like that. You just got to hope at some point they work some of this out, because – You would hate to have one, something affect a game at some point, which it will even with your regular referees in there. But you want the best possible product on the field, in not only with the football team, but with the referees as well. So, you know, this is something, like you said, it's not going to get a lot of press now, but the closer it gets to the regular season, this thing's going to scream right up to the top of the front pages.
Then just a couple other notes, and we'll get to Bill Nichols. But Casey Joyner did a piece for ESPN Insider, so maybe a lot of our listeners maybe don't subscribe to that. But talking about coverage busters, and he looked at guys in the receivers in the NFL who bust coverage, and not surprisingly, in that top group of players was Mike Wallace in the top five, I think it was, with the leader being the Tampa Bay's new signing, Vincent Jackson, which surprised me a little bit. But the group included guys like Victor Cruz, you know, all the names that you would think. And in the second tier, along with Larry Fitzgerald, you saw Antonio Brown. And, again, we talk about what's coming up this year, and the Steelers are going to put a tandem of receivers on the field that – probably the Steelers have never put out there such a dynamic group, even in the days of Swan and Stallworth and Frank Lewis or whoever the third receiver they had playing with them at different times. That was a little bit of an interesting piece, Dave, and it's going to be, some dynamite stuff if those guys stay healthy.
And speaking of healthy, Emmanuel Sanders in an interview this past week as well on 105 The X, quote-unquote, I'm 100% healthy and I'm feeling good. So, you know, that's the type of stuff, and people remember, if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, how worried I was about him heading into last offseason. My fears ended up coming to fruition, with the knee, and the knee wasn't my problem. It was those feet, but I think the foot injury kind of led to him running differently on that knee, which caused a problem. I think I read that. He, of course, had to have some minor surgery and have one of those knees worked on midway through the season last year. Then you throw in the unexpected death of his mother and all like that. It just really, until the AFC wild card game against the Broncos, kind of wondered if this guy was going to be able to get past all this. And he did. Boy, what a great game against the Broncos he had in that AFC wild card game. And he looks to build on that this year. And he's made it through all the OTA sessions so far. There's no talk about him having problems with those feet. So that's one thing that we just want to watch all the way through mini camp and into training camp, is not how he actually plays on the field during those sessions, is just can he stay on the field. And I'm with you. If he stays on the field along with Antonio Brown, and of course Mike Wallace will be in at some point, Jericho Cotchery was re-signed, this is a potent group of receivers.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We've got a lot to. We talked about what we'll be watching in minicamp and in the preseason. We'll be watching on the defensive side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball. There are a lot of things to watch with the backs and the offensive line, but Emmanuel Sanders will certainly be the focus of the wide receivers for me. Dave, just a couple other notes. The Cowboys put 90,000 in the bowl in their dome last week for a Brazil-Mexico soccer match. So Jerry Jones is making his money out of season as well.
A football, huh? Different type of football.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say OCU Mineiro signs a one-year deal with the Giants. That's been, everybody can imagine, big talk in New York and big talk around the NFL, what the right deal was for him. And then the disturbing news, Justin Blackmon, the receiver taken by the Jags at Oklahoma State, gets a DUI where not only is he caned out of his mind at .24 because you got to be absolutely bombed, but it's his second offense, and there are probably going to be some repercussions from that.
Yeah, and just because he hasn't signed that contract does not mean he can't be, you know, disciplined under the substance abuse and all that, you know, the conduct policy and all like that. So it's going to be interesting, excuse me, to see how that plays out. I think I read, too, where it's going to affect, you know, the money he makes in his contract as far as deferred guaranteed. I'm not sure how all that's going to play out yet and what they can and can't do with that. But he has not signed that rookie contract yet. It'll be interesting to look at those numbers. Speaking of possible suspensions, Wesley Saunders, you know, who is scheduled to be suspended for the first four games of the upcoming season here because of testing positive for Adderall. We had some movement in some similar situations last week because New York Giants running back Andre Brown had his four-game suspension lifted by the league, David, after his appeal hearing. Now, Brown had also been suspended back in March for Adderall as well, a prescription medication normally used to treat, you know, ADHD, something I can speak a lot about myself. But anyway, Brown reportedly had prescription for the drug, which he said he had taken since entering the league. And see, now you have to get prior approval for taking this. Wesley Saunders, there's a lot of confusion with him because there was a tweet out there, and if you go back and reread this, there were some indications that Saunders got that from his brother. If you go back and reread the tweet, David, it almost it was in response to another tweeter asking him how, you know, how he basically I've got it verbatim here, how didn't you know Adderall was legal? And Saunders responded back, because my 11-year-old brother takes it. Period. Had no clue. At first, it would lead you to believe, and in fact, I kind of jumped to a conclusion on this, that Saunders got this from his 11-year-old brother. But I think when you go back and look at the big picture now, I think Saunders was maybe meaning, and he was answering the question, how did you not know, you know, that Adderall was illegal? And the response I take it now from Saunders was, well, hell, I didn't think the drug was illegal because my little brother takes it too. And Saunders said in an interview with Jim Wexel since, I think that was posted about last week or 2 weeks ago or something like that, that he did not get the Adderall from his brother. So Saunders has appealed the suspension. You would think, why in the hell would you appeal the suspension if you didn't have a prescription for this and just didn't follow all the right channels? So I guess in short, what I'm saying is I think there's a good chance, if indeed Saunders has had a prescription for this thing and just did not follow the protocol of the NFL letting him know, I think there's a good chance that we could see Saunders' suspension either lowered or lifted like Brown. Now, of course, we don't know all the factors that are involved in here, and we likely won't because of the rules in the CBA and all like that. But look for this maybe over the next couple of weeks as some news.
Yeah, definitely interesting stuff, Dave. I, you know, we all hope that it gets overturned. My thought on the whole thing from day one is the fact that the Steelers didn't cut him immediately was that they didn't see this as some serious off-the-field infraction. The more we learn, the more it seems like it really wasn't a serious off-the-field infraction. It doesn't help his chances to make the team, obviously. But at the end of the day, I think he's going to be part of the 53. So we'll see what happens. We've got our interview with Bill Nickel. Anything you want to close out before we talk to Bill?
No, we just learned today that Mike Adams, David DeCastro, and Alameda Ta'amu will all be part of the mandatory minicamp next week. So that was passed along today by Mark Cabali. So that's good news there, and we'll have plenty to wrap up on Friday from this week OTA session as well.
Yeah, very good for them to be able to get at least some reps before they come into camp. We'll see what the Steelers do with the offensive line, with having all the pieces in place. That'll be some interesting stuff for us to watch as well. All right, well, good stuff. That wraps up part one. We're going to get to Bill Nickel from Outer Limit Sports, who's been working with Ziggy Hood. We'll be back in a second. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. We're pleased to have as our guest Bill Nickel of ISSA Outer Limit Sports. You can follow Bill and his company on Twitter at Outer LIM. Bill, thanks for taking the time to join us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Oh, no problem, Dave.
Bill, I guess the first question we have for you is you started this business 4 or 5 years ago. Tell us a little bit about the business itself and then how you got involved with Steeler Ziggy Hood.
What we do here is we'll take any athlete and we measure them to see what their abilities are and where their weaknesses are and what their strengths are. We go ahead and we get those weaknesses, you know, ramped up, and we get the also we're going to develop the strengths. So we use electronic equipment for all of that to test their plyometric ability. We see what their strength is and see where they lack. And then we design a custom program that is one-on-one, like you're going to work one-on-one with the trainer to become, you know, the best athlete you can. We don't really believe in team training because each individual is you know, their own unique. Someone might need something different than somebody else. Say somebody, sure, you know, needs hamstring work or rotator cuff or hip flexors, things like that. So everybody's going to be a little bit different. So it's all custom tailored to fit that individual athlete.
Now, when you say you do this with athletes, now do you work with, you know, weekend athletes, high school athletes, just professional athletes? Who are your clients?
We work everywhere from seventh grade up. So, you know, we work with a lot of high school football players around the area, especially since it's one-on-one training. It's a little more, you know, in-depth. So we do, we work with a lot of the running backs, you know, more of the playmakers, the quarterbacks, things like that, to get them faster, stronger, and more explosive. And, we work with a lot of baseball, too, hockey. We do almost every sport. So.
Right.
And then we work with college all the way up through pros. You got to be in, you know, a organized sport to
yes. So you're not taking you're not taking the woman who wants to change up from her yoga class.
No. We used to actually when I first started out, I did some personal training, but now it's all just athletic. We're really really based on that speed factor, and really taking some time off the 40-yard dash, and getting the kids and the professionals like Ziggy more explosive to get off the ball quicker.
And we've seen how that's changed in sports over the last 25 years. But before I let Dave get into some of the technical stuff that he's put up on the website, just tell us how, did you approach Ziggy? Did he approach you? How did that get started?
He approached me. He gave me a call back in February. You know, he wanted to get more explosive. He wanted to, you know, lean up a little bit. So we brought him in. We measured him. I noticed that, you know, he needed a little bit of plyometric, which is your reactive force. That's more of your bounce. Because you look at Ziggy, he's the strongest guy. I mean, even though his strength did increase here, we worked on his strength, but we also worked on how he applies that strength. So it, you know, transfers to the field. And he lacked in some, you know, plyometrics. So we've been doing a lot of plyometrics, things like that, to get his feet quicker, to get him to apply that strength faster.
For those people who don't know what plyometrics is, can you just give us a quick...
Plyometrics, think of it as being your involuntary force. Like when you go do a jump or something, or when you run, you're not thinking about it. It's just happening, and your tendons are stretching. See, strength is all muscular, but any athletic movement, you know, you got 0.15 seconds up to 0.2 seconds to apply that strength. And if it's going to take you, 5 seconds to do a 600-pound squat, you don't have that much time on the field to apply that strength. So you need to apply maybe 400 of that, you know, in a fraction of a second. And that's where you're going to get your sprint increase. You know, it's going to be force per stride. It's not so much how fast your legs are moving. It's force into the ground per stride. So that we train a lot of that. We do a lot of rate of force is also important. That's how fast your muscles contract. And everything, and when you add it all up, plyometrics, strength, rate of force, you know, you're going to get that performance increase.
Bill, Ziggy's long been known as a workout warrior from things that we've read in the media and all like that. So how much tweaking did you have to do from, you know, what was he doing wrong, I guess, would be my question. What did you have to change up in how he was working out?
Well, we have some new techniques we're using. I mean, the old philosophy that everybody really goes by when they work out is that no pain, no gain philosophy. And really, when it all comes down to a science, it's less is better when it's done the right way. And it's called a periodization is the term for it. And, you design a program where every week you're going to have different rep ranges, not just go out there and do 3 sets of 10, You're gonna do different rep ranges. You got the order of your exercises important, and also the rest in between your sets. So, I mean, you can have 60-second rest. Sometimes you're gonna have, you know, 4 or 5 minute rest. It has a different effect. So, when we design that program, we are, you know, we're designing it in a way that it's gonna fit him. And Ziggy himself, you know, like I said, he lacks that foot control, muscles in the feet, stability. Some balance there. I mean, he had that left ankle problem a couple years ago, and we've been working on that, a little bit of flexibility work there. And, of course, you know, getting his feet quicker is going to be important for this season. And I think he's going to be a beast out there, I really do.
How do you have to – I'm curious about coordination between what you do and what the Steelers, what Garrett Guimont, the strength and coordinator – man with the Steelers, what type of thing do you have to get run by him, or is it pretty much, you know, he does what he pleased? Does any of that have to be coordinated at all?
No, we pretty much keep to ourselves on our program here. It's all private. So, I mean, Ziggy came to us back in February, and, you know, we got him started up in early March, and he has OTAs right now, and he's been going to those, and he comes in, you know, a little less now. He was coming 5 days a week, but now he's coming a couple days a week until OTAs are over here in a few weeks. Then he'll be back full time again. But he loves the program here. And as far as coordinating, no, I haven't talked to really any coaches down there of, you know, what they do. We do some work here, some hands technique and things like that. But, you know, Ziggy, he knows how to play football, and he's a strong guy. So, I mean, I've seen those tweaks I could make to make him a better athlete. And his strength went up, too. I mean, his deadlift went from, you saw the 700-pound deadlift video that you posted on your website there. That started at 640. I mean, he put 60 pounds on that, and it went up in that box jump video. I have a video of him missing a 43-inch back in March. He missed a 43, and now he's getting a 50. So,
you might want to describe that for those who haven't seen the video.
He's sitting on an 18-inch box in a seated position, and yeah, he's rocking back and forth a little bit. But I mean, to lift a 307-pound man up, you know, 50 inches to jump up on a 50-inch platform from a seated position, it's going to show your explosiveness. And yeah, there's going to be some other factors there, like the plyometric ability and things, but. That's more of a starting strength thing. If you went from a standing position, it's going to be more of a running start. You're going to get more of a plyometric effect, which is that involuntary stretching of the tendons to add up that force. Your tendons are going to stretch like rubber bands if you went from a running start. But coming from a seated, it's mostly rate of force, which is just all muscular strength.
You passed along the numbers, and I appreciate you doing that. After phase one of Ziggy, which you say ran from March to April, that body fat dropped from 24% to 18%. His weight went from 305 to 307, and he lost 18 pounds of fat and gained 20 pounds of muscle. That was after phase one. Can you kind of share with our listeners kind of where he's – I think you said he's about to start phase four. Can you kind of share where he's at through phase, three?
Yeah, we just what I like to see. I mean, the pictures are great, but what I like to see is that performance gain. You know, I'm seeing that the vertical go up a few inches, and that's a standing vertical. You know, using electronic equipment, so there's no lie there. And his 10-yard dash, we use lasers for that. Here we do everything electronic. So I mean, that's decreasing this in fractions of a second, and then his strength is going up. So. But with those pictures, I mean, that shows, you know, the change in physique. They're nice to see and everything. Everybody likes to have a cut physique. And with that loss of body fat there, you know, his weight pretty much stayed the same. You know, he went to like 2 pounds. It could be water weight. But we wanted to keep him, you know, between 3 and 310 for his position. But what you're not seeing here, like you mentioned, that 18 pounds of fat loss is replaced by 20 pounds of muscle. And that's phase one. That was in 29 days here. We were pretty good at this. Even with the high school kids. High school kids, we try to put, you know, weight on. We're putting 20, 30 pounds on a high school football player and also getting them, you know, jumping higher, 6 inches on their vert. But, it's a pretty good transformation, if you ask me. I mean, he did real well. He's a real hard worker and, you know, hits the diet, and that's what's important.
Yeah, Bill, I was going to ask you about that, just how you incorporate, I mean, obviously that kind of those numbers you quoted there in that period of time, you know, transforming or basically losing 18 pounds of fat and adding 20 pounds of muscle is extraordinary. How much focus do you guys have on the diet, and how do you implement that? Because Ziggy's obviously not there 24 hours a day.
Right. Well, Ziggy, I mean, he's been a professional athlete here. You know, he went through college. He knows how to eat right. He knows what he has to do. We just give him tips. We tell him, you know, got to eat this much protein per day, and you know, it has to be split up into, you know, six meals. That way, your body can use it to prevent muscle breakdown and to grow muscle. And you know, the workouts, and you can't be in junk food. It's as simple as that. And I mean, there's some other secrets that we have with the diet and secrets with the training program. But I mean, really, it's when the training program is designed right, and it's spot on the money, you know. And he's dedicated. And this, I mean, Ziggy is the most dedicated. He's ready to go. He really wants to help the team, and putting in the hard work, determination, and you know, if he's been eating good, it's going to show. It's going to show. And it's even more now. I mean, I should take another measurement on him here on all this stuff pretty soon here after phase four. Maybe we just started into phase four this week, just to answer your question there. But the other two phases, I mean, we're working on getting that strength up, getting that explosiveness up. I'm looking at that performance, you know, to transfer to the field.
We noticed that he's wearing a weight belt during the OTA sessions. Is that something that you suggested, or what's the benefit of him? I mean, obviously, it's to work with more weight on him to help with the legs, I guess.
Yeah, I talked with him about that yesterday when he was in here. I didn't suggest that, but
I don't see it as right.
I didn't. He told me about it. Yeah, I didn't. I didn't tell him to do that. He did that on his own. But he said it wasn't a real heavy vest. You know, it's not like a 25-pound or 30-pound weighted vest. It's more of a 6-pound or something like that. He just wants to – I don't know. I guess it doesn't – it's kind of weighed him down a little bit more, which it's okay. It's okay to do, in my opinion.
Because it can tend to strain the tendons, right, if you have too much weight that your body's not used to carrying?
Yeah, they say, you know, the old ankle weights, what George Foreman had said way back in the day, that wearing ankle weights messed up his ankles and, you know, running with them and things like that. And I don't agree with doing that. And really, we don't do any weighted vest training here except for lifting purposes, such as somebody's doing like a walking lunge. I'll put a weighted vest on them so they don't have to hold dumbbells or, you know, but you can only work and do certain things with that. I don't agree in going on running with it on.
Did he, you know, he tweaked something during last year. You're obviously a Steelers fan in Pittsburgh and all like that. Did he have some
since
sort
age
of...
five, yep.
Did he have some sort of groin or something issue last year would be my first question. And second of all, well, I'll go ahead and let you answer that before we go to the next question.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what I saw with him was, I mean, a lot of athletes, you know, they don't tend to work their hip flexors right. Their hip flexors get tight. You know, they have real strong glutes and hamstrings and quads, especially quads, and their hip flexors tend to get tight. So we do a lot of work here on flexibility of that and also strengthening that hip flexor. That's the hip flexor as the action where, you know, you're lifting your knee up to your chest if you're in a standing position. It's the muscles that lift your knee up, which is your recovery phase on like a running stride. And, yeah, and it's also in his rotator cuffs and his shoulders were a little bit tight. And that's common with guys who bench a lot of weight and, you know, tend to do a lot of chest exercises where you got to keep those rotator cuffs, you know, healthy. But other than that, I mean, he's pretty good. Anything that, you know, he's working through it and it's come a long way. So
what did you notice as a Steelers fan, you know, not from, you know, what did you notice in his play last year?
I don't analyze as much as you guys do. I mean, you guys analyze it like there's no tomorrow, but I'm real focused on what I'm doing here. But, I've been a Steelers fan since age five. I go to some games, I watch the games. I really, to tell you the truth, I really didn't look into him a whole lot. I mean, I knew he was the number one draft pick and I knew he was, you know, he's playing, he was doing his job out there. You know, letting Woodley get by him there to go on and get some sacks, but
little explosive.
I'll be watching him. That's for sure.
Yeah, right.
Because he hadn't come to you at that point.
Right.
Dave, anything you want to close with before I pump Bill up about his place?
No. Let's let him talk a little bit more about his business and get him out of here for him.
Yeah, Bill, right. I know there are tons of people who listen in our area, and I have a friend in particular who comes to mind whose kid's going to be a sophomore and a quarterback at a local high school team. Where exactly is your place located, and you want to tell us how they can find you on the web and how they can get in touch with you if they want to give a phone call?
Yeah, we're just outside of Mars, Pennsylvania, it's real near the intersection of 228 and Route 8. So it's an actual.
So just roughly, you're out near the airport, roughly.
No. This is.
I got my planets confused. Mars and Moon.
Oh, you're not in Moon. Yeah, we're up in Mars. So we're up beside Cranberry. So, we're actually not even 2 miles from the Mars High School. So if you're going toward Route 8, we're located on Denny Road, just off of Route 8. So it's just into Butler County on Route 8. Not even a mile. You're going to turn left. So if you're coming up through Gibsonia, you're going to turn left as soon as you get into Butler County on Denny Road. It's right by a gas station there. And we're located a couple hundred yards back the road in like a 4,000 square foot warehouse. And like I said, attributes like speed, strength, and explosiveness can be trained. And we're doing the best we can with it. We're learning more every day and pumping out some pretty good results. What's that?
Yeah, you're on Twitter. You're Outer Outer LIM. And what about? You have a website as well, right?
It's also the same thing. It's OUTERLIM.com, and so is the Facebook. It's also Outer Limb on Facebook. And actually, I'll be putting out a 5-minute training video of Ziggy here in July, probably after we get his training pretty much tied up for the year. I'll be putting out a 5-minute video showing some of the different exercises he did, showing, I think this 50-inch box jump's going to go up a little bit more, probably already has in the past 2 months, and, his speed results, things like that, his quickness on his feet. It's going to show some of the stuff he did to get those results.
And keep those pictures coming, too, Steelers fans. That's something that the normal fan just doesn't normally get to see, a player's transformation like this. And I speak for many when I say I appreciate you posting those. That was some great before and after
stuff. Yeah, and I'll say it is good. It's nice to look behind the curtain. We try to, get in there and talk as much as we can about what's going on, but we don't get into the training as much. That's not our area of expertise, so great to have you on. Thanks for taking the time, and maybe we'll catch you again at the end of July when they're back in camp, and you can update us where Ziggy is now.
All right, I'll keep sending you guys updates. If you keep checking the Twitter, I'll post them, and I think he's going to be throwing guys around out there like toys this year, so he's getting pretty explosive. So thanks, guys.
All right, Bill, that's Bill Nickel from ISSA Outer Limit Sports. As I said, you can follow him on Twitter, @OuterLim. Doing some great work with Ziggy Hood. Great stuff there from Bill Nickel. Dave, nice job lining that up, following that story. And I know people can find that story and kind of track Ziggy's progress here through, as we said, the end of July. And then once the end of July comes, he'll be doing his work at, on campus, essentially the Steeler South Side stuff with the Steeler strength and conditioning coaches. But really nice job there. Enjoyed his time. Some good recap. And as we said, we'll be back Friday with the OTA wrap-up. And then you pointed out that the three rookies, it looks like, are going to be in for the mini camp. So it would be fun to see those guys get their first orientation on the field with the rest of the squad as they go through the mandatory mini camp starting next week. So anything to close here before we get out?
Nah, just usual stuff. Follow me on Twitter @SteelersDepot. Follow David @HammerSpeaks. David also does work with some Pirate stuff @DTOnPirates as well, with the Pirates still competing and right around 500, which is a good sign this time of year. And also you can follow the show @TerriblePodcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, we appreciate the donations we've seen via PayPal and all like that as well. So we appreciate everybody.
Yeah, a couple fantastic donations this week. Really generous stuff from people. As always, Dave and I appreciate that. It means a lot to us. It allows us to, do what we're doing and be better at it. And really much appreciation. Hopefully, I've gotten an email back to everybody who gave us a donation. If I happen to miss you, my apologies, but that is much appreciated. So, as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.